This, of course, is Golf Today. Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch, Golf Week Magazine. It's getting late early, as you like to say, my friend.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of talk about bubbles, but there are actually bubbles within bubbles. Mm. Out here, I mean, we just saw Jordan Spieth there, 50th. He's well inside making the playoffs, but he needs to finish in the top 50 at the end of the playoffs. He needs to make the BMW Championship to guarantee himself a spot in all the signature events last year. He's relied on a lot of sponsor exemptions in recent years in those events. You know, other guys trying to keep their card through the course of the fall, staying in the top 100, guys needing that top 70 by the end of the Wyndham Championship this week. But even you go all the way up to the Tour Championship, Xander Schauffele has never missed a Tour Championship. He's always been in the top 30. He's 41 right now. So even he has work to do over the next few weeks.
Did you like bubbles as a kid? Did you play with bubbles, blow bubbles as a kid?
No. Definitely not. I'm not a bubble boy.
Well, there are a lot of bubble boys at Wyndham. It's a make or break week, I'd say, in the men's game because the Wyndham Championship is the final event of the 2025 regular season on the PGA Tour. And then after this week, the top 70 players in the standings will advance to the three-week playoffs that culminate the Tour Championship August 21st through 24th in Atlanta. Now, Todd Lewis is out at Sedgefield Country Club in Greensboro, North Carolina. T. Lou, great to see you. The pressure is mounting. What can you tell us?
Yep. Well, I can tell you that we are in God's country, that of course being North Carolina, home to NASCAR, sweet tea, great pork barbecue, and great golf. This is the 86th edition of the Wyndham Championship on the PGA Tour schedule. It's going to be a hot one this week, but the heat is really going to be on those trying to make their way inside the top 70 at the end of this tournament, which of course means they are in the FedEx Cup playoffs. They hope to get to the playoffs, make a run at the Tour Championship, and hopefully hold the FedEx Cup in Atlanta. But you can't do that unless you're in the playoffs. And right now, there are several players that are on that bubble. You look at the number, which is 70. Matty Schmidt is on that number 70 in the FedEx Cup standings. But you see all those players around that number 70. No player on that screen is safe to make it to the FedEx Cup playoffs. And yes, the playoffs start next week in Memphis. But for everyone you see on the screen here, well, the playoffs actually start this week here in Greensboro.
If I need to make birdie, then I might be a little bit more aggressive. But hopefully, you know, the first 71 holes I can do enough that, you know, the situation in the last hole won't matter.
Is there a different kind of pressure this week?
Well, I mean, I think now there's pressure from guys all the way from probably 38th, 40th, all the way to, you know, 180th. Usually this week was only about 110 and up. Now guys are worried about, you know, staying in the top 50, making the playoffs at top 70, keeping their card at 100. So I think there's stress that goes a lot deeper in the field this week than it used to only be, you know, the guys outside of 110.
Finally, given you have to play well or you have to wait till the fall this week, what attitude do you hope to bring to the course?
Your best. You have to have your best attitude this week because you don't have any room for mental errors. If, you know, normally if you get mad and make another bogey, you got tournaments and tournaments to make up for. This week you don't have any. You're at the end of the straw, so you just got to give it your best and try to mentally, even in this heat and this, you know, golf course and tired at the end of the season, there's no room for errors.
Win or get in contention every week, I don't think that really changes. More of an emphasis, but I think kind of like a tough, you know, scoring toughly for me, like the last, you know, few weeks feel like I'm playing better than the scores I'm putting up. So I think just to kind of, you know, knowing you need probably like a top three, you know, to get into next week, I think kind of will help free me up a little bit and just kind of lean into that and try to have some fun and make a final push, you know.
I'm going to try to bring a great attitude, you know. I think, you know, I'm having a great season. So whether I make it to Memphis or not, I compared to my rookie year this year, it's been a dream. So, yeah, obviously it'd be great to make it to Memphis. But if not, we got the whole fall. And, you know, obviously at the end of the day, it's stay inside the top 100.
I think the aggressiveness does change a little bit. You really don't really have any more events to go to anymore. So, you know, the mindset will be obviously just stick to the game plan. I think at the end of the day, you still got to go out and execute no matter how aggressive you are. So just be smart and definitely try to take advantage of the opportunities I have.
I mean, I feel like every week on the PGA Tour, like the points just increase on the top finishes. So I focus on playing a good week and hopefully get a top 10 or better.
Do you feel like you will monitor other positions, other players' positions as the rounds continue, or are you just going to focus on your game only?
I would say if I play in that average category, then I would probably have a look at it. But my focus and my goal is to focus on the high end of the leaderboard.
Do you feel like the playoffs have started for you?
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
Just to emphasize the importance of this final regular season event here at Sedgefield, players in position 60 through 109 currently in the FedEx Cup standings in the field here at the Wyndham Championship. And that brings up another point. At the end of the fall season, the FedEx fall season, only the top 100 in the standings will be exempt to play next year. It used to be 125, so that's a 20% reduction. But again, if you don't qualify for the playoffs here at the Wyndham, you still have seven more fall events to try to creep inside the top 100. And like I mentioned, this is the final regular season event. There's a lot of money up for grabs if you finish inside the top 10 in the Comcast Business top 10. And there are a couple of players in the field here trying to improve their position. And oh yeah, Damon and Eamon, there is the Ryder Cup influence. There are several players in the field here, be it Americans or Europeans, who are trying to emphasize a position on their respective teams. So this is a huge week here in Greensboro, North Carolina.
Huge week indeed. Todd Lewis reporting not too far from where he grew up, which is very cool indeed. This time of year is very cool, and I love how he put that. There's Ryder Cup implications. It's major championships. Who can get into that top 30? Signature events for next year. Full employment versus, you know, having to, you know, pockmark your schedule together. This is a very consequential week, maybe the most consequential week of the year.
And it was interesting listening to some of the guys out there to see how differently they're processing it. You're talking about some guys who said, okay, well, if I make it to next week, great. If I don't, not a big deal. I've got to play through the fall. Those are the guys who feel somewhat secure inside that top 100. And then you see guys like Tom Kim, who probably have maybe slightly stronger ambitions. They're trying to push their way towards where they expect to be in this game. And a Tom Kim expects to be at East Lake at the end of every season that he begins. But a lot of these guys are going to be going home, and then that poses its own problem for these guys as well in terms of schedules. If you're a guy who's finishes, say, outside the top 70, but you're comfortably inside the top 100, you can play through the fall to kind of improve your position. But you're staying home for the next few weeks. You've got nowhere to play out here as the PGA Tour playoffs go on. And then obviously there are some dead weeks in the fall on the PGA Tour. There's a Ryder Cup in there. So your opportunities to remain competitively sharp through the fall, if you're not necessarily motivated by improving your position, well then it gets very complicated by the first weekend in August for a professional golfer out there if they're not on the right side of the bubble.
Let me ask you this. There's a 20% reduction in cards, as Todd Lewis pointed out, from 125 to 100. Does that improve the product in your mind, this the more cutthroat, kill or be killed nature of the PGA Tour versus years past?
I think in general it does. You're going to find a difference of opinion on that depending on what corner of the locker room you go to. And there are justified arguments on either side of that. I do think the tour should be streamlined to some extent, but it's not the same rules that apply to everyone out there because so many guys who have fallen ineligible for some of the signature events, including board members of the PGA Tour, seem to get more sponsor invites than others. And these are prominent names. They are clearly going to be additive to a golf tournament. They've got great records. You can make an absolute defense as to why guys like, say, Adam Scott or Jordan Spieth and Webb Simpson over the last couple of years have been invited. They are popular, accomplished players.
Yeah.
But again, when you're creating a scenario where the tour is paring down and thinning the herd, then that becomes a gripe for the guys who aren't necessarily going to be on the list for those sponsor invites. So it really does cut both ways. But I do, in general, favour making it a more competitive, thinner tour.
The old adage is play better. Jordan Spieth, 50th in the standings, a three-time major champ. Golf royalty is in Greensboro this week trying to improve his position. And then you have the likes of Matty Schmidt. You have a Gary Woodland who had a wonderful story just coming back from brain surgery. He's 72 in the FedEx Cup standings, no doubt looking for a big week. He wants to extend his season as well.
Everybody is out there fighting for something. Speaking of fighting for something, golf's latest major champion coming up next. Patrick Harrington still throwing punches out there. He joined an elite group at the weekend when he won the Senior Open on Sunday. We'll talk about that with the champ when we come back. We're back on Golf Today. Let's flash back to 2007 and the Open Championship. when Padraig Harrington defeated Sergio Garcia in a playoff to win the Claret Jug. It was his first career major victory, and it came at a famously difficult Carnoustie. And a year later, Padraig successfully defended his title in the 2008 Open at Royal Birkdale, the windiest week I've ever experienced at a major championship. He was 4 under par over the final 9 holes and finished 4 ahead of the runner-up, Ian Poulter.
Well, Eamon, this was a special moment just a couple of weeks ago as Harrington hit the opening tee shot at the 153rd Open at Royal Portrush. Said he got a little emotional during the introduction, dubbed it one of his top open moments. Pick up that tee, fairway hit. And I'll tell you what, the moments just keep on coming. Look at that smile, by the way. How about Sunday, earning victory at the Senior Open for his second major title this season on PGA Tour Champions. Paddy now has 11 titles on the senior circuit, and he has won multiple times on tour each of the last 4 seasons. Enjoying this small list, players to win both the Open and the ISPS Honda Senior Open, Gary Player, Bob Charles, Tom Watson, Darren Clark, and Paddy is the 5th man to do it, and the World Golf Hall of Fame member joins us now. Congratulations. Great to see you. How much impact does the winning get the older you get? Does it feel different, even more special as you age like fine wine?
It does. When you win as a young man, you always think there's going to be another win. You always think winning's going to be around the corner. As you get older, you realize you don't win as often as you think. So when you do get a win, you've got to enjoy it. You've got to celebrate it. You've got to make time to celebrate it. And also, you kind of look at the legacy of your wins. So winning a senior open after winning a regular open, as I said, 5 people, I'm the 5th to have done that. So that's going to be there for a long time. Winning at Sunningdale is very special. That's something that you would never realize. I would never realize that as a kid. But as you get older, the only thing I regret about my second places over the years is some of them are at great venues and I'd love to have won at them. So you kind of, your venue, it gets very special. I think as you get older, it's all about your legacy. So you do value these things and look at these things. So yeah, it's special to have got that senior open. And the thing with the senior open is I've had a couple of runners up. I've been 5th. You know, it would start turning into, you know, I knew I needed to win it. It would start turning into one of those, like Rory, that it's just getting harder and harder. And there is a window of opportunity on the Champions Tour. You know, they say on to about 56, 57 before it gets harder. You can still win, but it definitely gets harder. There's more fresh faces. There's younger guys coming in. So you want to win it sooner rather than later, or else it could become a bit of a millstone around your neck.
Patrick, there's an assumption that most of us have when you see a guy with a trophy on Sunday night, you think, well, that guy played well, he must be happy with his game. But it was fascinating listening to you after that win at Sunningdale, because you talked about how the fact you didn't feel as though you were playing that well, and there was what you described as turmoil in your head that week. What was your route around that to get to the win in the end?
So at the US Senior Open, I played great, hit the ball great, was really comfortable in my swing, and had the worst week, full-on yips on the greens. Now, I'm sure I got the ball in the hole and the stats would have been fine, but I'd full-on yips. If you go, I had some putts that I had a longer recoil than I had follow-through. Like, it was bad. At this one, I was the opposite. I hit a ball on Friday afternoon off the 18th tee in the middle of the first fairway. That's a good 60 yards left. And I didn't know why I did it. So this was a big issue. I struggled with my swing and ball striking. I had nightmare on the range. I just couldn't find anything. But I was very comfortable on the greens. I'm very comfortable around the greens. So it was the opposite. Now, what I did like about it, and I did watch the coverage back, which is not something there's been a lot of coverage here, as I say, which is, unlike the Champions Tour, we don't get very much of the Champions Tour in Europe or in Ireland. Whereas with this one, they had wall-to-wall coverage from Sky. So I watched it back and I could see how intently focused. So when you have low expectations, you've got to find a way. And that's exactly what I did during the week. I toned everything down on Sunday. I tried to swing as smooth and as slow as I could. But I was very much into the routine and the focus, and that took over. So as a player, I am an optimist, but I'm like all other players. So I'm kind of hoping for the rest of the season I can find the good swing and ball striking of the US Senior Open and the USPGA as well. I was good there. Get the short game that's come back, my chipping, particularly my putting of the Senior Open, and then throw in that mental game, and you know, who knows for the rest of the year. But that's what we always, as a player, we're always hoping we get everything together. But definitely that mental game was very sharp this week.
On that subject, that's got to make life interesting for Ronan Flood, your caddy. I read where you said you don't employ Ronan to kind of carry the towel out there, that you employ him to be a psychologist out there as well. What's a week like last week like for Ronan?
We were joking on Sunday. He had at least 6 drops of towels and head covers where somebody else had to pick them up. And usually, you know, you often see caddy or players' caddies will make a jibe about that, you know, that's bad caddying. As far as I'm concerned, it shows how good a caddy is. So if you don't care about your caddy dropping things or doing superfluous things, it means that you value him for the right stuff at the other end. And that would be the case with Ronan. He knows me well. And on those Sundays, all the time, but particularly on the Sundays, you know, he's full on in my ear all the way around. You will very rarely see him leave my side where he's not talking to me and, you know, keeping me where I need to be. And you know, I can categorically say, I tell the story, if I want to go back to 2007, my caddy won me the Open Championship, because for the only time in my life, I was despondent. I felt like I choked after I hit my second shot in the water on the 72nd hole. And he talked me out. I wanted to give up. And he talked me out of it. He spent his time, you know, it's not over yet. One shot. It's all cliches. You know, nobody's going to come up. Nobody reinvents the wheel out here. These are all cliches. He'd worked with Bob Rotella on. He was in my ear. I think he took the club off me, took the 4-iron off me, because I would have wrapped it around it. I was just devastated. And, you know, he kept at me. And, you know, maybe after 100 yards, I started to listen. And by the time I got to the ball, I was back believing and back in the zone. Another caddy would have been devastated himself and put his own head down and let the two of us wallow in our misery going up to that fifth shot. And yes, no, he did his job. And what's interesting is, what's funny is I tell this story, a longer version than this one. I'm quickening it up here, about how he believed and how he went, did his, you know, was into it. It's not over, one shot at a time, let's see. And, you know, I told him for months, and eventually he was in the room when I was telling the story, probably at Christmas or so. And, you know, after I finished telling the story, you know, Ronan really believed in me. He says, no, I was just doing my job. I thought you lost the feckin' Open too. So, but that's what a good caddy is. You know, I see it time in. Players sometimes want the butler out there. That's rubbish. If you want the butler, we can get anybody to do that. You can train a monkey to do the yardages, and we'll have lasers soon nearly every tournament. You know, that stuff is just so rudimentary. You want a caddy that's able to say the right thing and not the wrong thing, and be there for you, be able to keep it light when it needs to be light, be able to have a word with you when you need to have a word. You know, your caddy's got to have the, and this is where players, I know we're going sidetracked here, this is where players go wrong. If you continually beat down on your caddy, he's not able to say what he needs to say to you. So if you continually say you got the club wrong, you did that wrong, that's, the caddy's going to just go quiet. You want the caddy who gives you an honest opinion, tells you what you need to know. If you're grumpy or acting up, he tells you that. And on the vice versa, he can give you an arm around the shoulder when you need an arm around the shoulder. But you've got to allow your caddy do that job. Whereas you constantly see players just at their caddies, and just the caddy then just can't perform. He just goes quiet, shuts up. Which, if you know Ronan, as you do, Eamon, he never shuts up.
Ronan, one of the great truth tellers, but you've also, throughout your career, Patrick, been a great truth teller. And back in May, you said you rued the fact that you got overconfident on 15 at that senior PGA. You hit the hook, you lose that championship, and you said, doggone it, this has been a problem for me throughout my career. What did you learn from May that's helped you at the senior U.S. Open and again at Sunningdale as well?
You know, I wrote it in, I have, which is great about phones these days, I have my notes right there on my phone. After every tournament, I'll write something down. And I actually wrote down the points, like that 15th hole, where I have an issue. I talked to Ronan about it. I've tried to make him aware of it, but it's not as easy for him to be aware of it because it normally happens when I get overconfident. It normally happens. And it happened to me again last week on 12 on Saturday. I birdied 11, feeling pretty good about myself. Stand up on 12 and I'm over the ball hitting the shot before I really am into it. At the US Open, I was great. The US Senior Open, I was really good. So there are choke points for me. And if I explain it to everybody, will know this choke point. Nearly everybody does the same thing. Layups on par fives. You know, most people won't focus on those. I'm one of those. You know, it's just a nonchalant, no interest. I'll just hit it down there. So that's a point that I have to go, hang on a second, it's a layup. Make sure you're into this, whereas it's very easy because it's a layup, it's a nothing shot. I'm very much, when I get shots like that, second shots on par fives where I'm not going for the pin, I just lose focus on because like I'm not going for the pin. I'm hitting it down the left of the green. The flag's on the right. I'm not even really trying to hit the green. I'm hitting it down the left side. I lose focus on. And I did it at the USPGA, which I've done it throughout my career and I've always done it. But it hurt at the USPGA. I was in a great place. But I birdied that 14th, got up on the 15th tee. No different than my 72nd hole at the Open in 2007. I couldn't see myself hitting a bad shot as I got to that tee box. I was so confident, overconfident, got up there buzzing. I've never driven the ball as well as that day. I was going to bust it down the middle. And this is what happens. So when I'm overconfident, I'm over the ball, and at some stage in the backswing, I get a tiny bit of doubt, but I'm not expecting it. And that tiny bit of doubt explodes into a panic and I hit a bad shot. Whereas if I got to that tee box and was nervous, I'd be like, okay, geez, don't hit it in the water. Don't hit it out of bounds left. Don't hit it in the water right. Don't hit it short in the water. Don't hit it in the bunkers. Don't hit it over there. And all of a sudden I go, okay, well, what club are you going to hit? Okay, you're going to hit, okay, well, it's not a hybrid. Okay, it's three. Okay, you're going to hit driver. This is your target. Get to the top of my backswing and I have the same doubt that I had before. But guess what? It doesn't feel as bad because I was prepared for it. No different than making a speech. If you visualize your speech when you get up there, you'll be just as nervous. But because you were prepared for it, it never seems as bad. So I just have that issue that I get overconfident and, you know, I'm better off. As Sunday last week at the Open, I wasn't confident in my swing. So if you look at it, I played great. My focus was great because at all stages, I was worried about that 60-yard hook turning up that I didn't know why.
You know, Padraig, I'm fascinated here. I'm realising optimistically that I'm not the craziest Irish golfer on this show at the moment. You're making me feel very positive about my kind of mental turmoil.
I have all the answers. It doesn't mean I do it.
I tell you what, you said something interesting. I thought 55, 56, that kind of sweet spot. Can you push that number farther, older? Langer won 14 times post the age of 60. Hale Irwin, very successful as well, late 50s, early 60s. Can you push that 56 number to 59? Are you interested in pushing that number beyond 56?
Well, I'm definitely interested. I love playing the game. I'm still fascinated with it. Have you seen Bernard Langer? Like, that man is like, at 67 years of age, he's the fittest man you'll ever see. This body doesn't quite look like Bernard Langer. So, I want to do it. There's no doubt about it. Physically, lengthwise, I'm sure when I'm 65, I'll still be one of the longest hitters on the Champions Tour. That won't be an issue. Will I, you know, hold on to the, you know, we all have baggage out. This is the great thing about the Champions Tour. Anybody goes out there and watches, you'll see every player and they shoot good scores, but they're all carrying some baggage, you know, so it depends how you can handle it. You know, Bernard, we know, has had many a times has had the yips with his putting. It's the same with his chipping. You know, you can go through all the different players out there and they're all carrying something. So that's the great thing about it. And will I have at 60 years of age, will I have the capability for that not to overcome? Yeah, I hope so. I hope I can still be competitive. But right at 53 years of age, I'm hoping that the golf swing, the short game and the putting all fall into place so that I can still compete with the young guys. That's my motivation in many ways. And playing against the Champions Tour, I need some real skills to beat the guys in the Champions Tour. These guys, you know, we go to a regular Champions Tour course, you know, I might have a great day driving and hit 10 fairways. And like, I'm literally last in the field of fairways hit. As in, these guys know how to score, and I have to use really completely different skills on the Champions Tour on those events than necessarily I have if I was competing against the younger guys, which, you know, hopefully makes you a better player.
You've played 9 regular tour events this year, Padraig, including a couple of major championships, obviously. Are you getting closer to a point where you're going to decide that you are going to focus on the senior circuit, or do you still think you have it to hang with those kids?
I did. At the Scottish Open last year, I tried as hard as I could and shot like 2 over par for like maybe a 1 under cut. So I was so far off the mark, and I tried so hard. And the Friday evening, I was giving up. That was it. I'm not playing anymore with the young guys. I went to the Open the following week. I worked with Pete Cowan, and I was top 10 in ball striking, strokes gained, tee to green at the Open in 2024. So clearly I was competitive. I think I was number 2 in strokes gained approach at the BMW PGA last year. Something very up the top. So clearly those two gave me hope. This year, I've got distracted this year. I've been not a good boy at all this year, and I've played poorly. I've been chasing swing perfection again, and I've played poorly in the regular events I've played. Hopefully, you know, the rest of the year, I've got 3 more regular events to play: Irish Open, BMW Wentworth, Dunhill. I will say they're also talking about changing the category, so I may actually end up not being able to play those events going forward. I think they're changing the Legends category on the tour, maybe. So look, it could be an end, but I am aware that if I don't feel competitive, I'm not going to be there. That's just the way it is. I actually want to turn up and still try and win. So, you would always turn up at the real PGA and the real Open, even if you can't win one more time to say goodbye. But at the moment, I'm turning up believing I can physically, if I put that swing together, if I put that short game together, if I put that mental game together. I know everything has to fall in place, and that's maybe why I'm putting myself under too much pressure, that I believe everything has to fall in place. But yeah, I still think I can do it. As I said, there's, you know, I have weeks where I certainly, when I play, if you saw me out there, you wouldn't see any difference between my play and a young guy's play. You might see a difference in the score, but you wouldn't be able to tell the difference, let's say, unless you were looking at the card at the end of the day.
Speaking of the regular tour, Scottie Scheffler says his wins last about 2 minutes and then it's on to dinner and other thoughts. How long do wins last for you? Is it 2 minutes, 2 hours, 2 days, 2 weeks?
A lot longer. My wife said to me last night, I probably was getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning like every 53-year-old to go to the bathroom. But seemingly I woke my wife at that stage to say, do you know, I've just won the last 2 majors back to back, or last 2 senior majors. I don't remember saying it, but my wife was definitely annoyed about that. Mine lasts a lot longer and will last a lot longer. I think that's a legacy thing that, as you get older, you realize these things don't happen that often, and your body and your mind, well, your mind needs to know that you did good. Whereas when I was a younger man, I'd win a tournament on a Sunday evening, I'd be thinking about, well, what am I going to change in my swing on Monday morning? Now, I suppose when I was a younger man, I spent more time in the gym. My diet was better. You know, I didn't drink. You know, all that sort of stuff around. You know, now that's all gone out the window. As an older man, you've got to do it a different way. You've got to make sure you enjoy it. And I will say, the words that Scotty said don't line up with the person that we know Scotty is, because Scotty plays a lot of golf when he's at home. He loves playing golf. He goes out and plays. We hear about these rounds where he's a +6 or 8 or 9 or something like. He likes playing golf. So I don't know what he was trying to say, and the longer version of what he's saying, but his actions are, he's a man who's like every one of us that is obsessed with it and love the game. You know, he's not like a Monty. Monty never, you know, they used to put bananas in Monty's golf bag when he'd finish a tournament, and he'd come back out 3 weeks later and the banana would still be in the bag. He never opened up the bag, never hit a shot, never hit a practice shot. You know, which Tiger was the opposite. Tiger used to do loads of practice away from tournaments and do none at tournaments. Monty did none away from the tournament and none at tournaments. Scotty seems to play a lot. So I think it was worrying what he said, but I don't think it adds up to who he is. He seems to actually really like golf and like playing. So I don't think there's a, I don't think we need to worry about him just yet.
No doubt. Well, Paddy, may you continue to savor the wonderful play and victories that you have. And we so appreciate your time and thoughts on this Tuesday. Thank you so much.
Yeah, well, I will. I just have to say, because Eamon brought it up, he's never sent me a video of his swing for me to give him an analysis. So, you know, he can sit there and say he has all these swing thoughts, but if he hasn't asked me, you know, what's that say about me?
I'd be afraid of violating obscenity laws by sending that to you, Padraig.
Give me a chance.
Give him a chance.
No, I don't need a coach who's crazier than the student. Oh, definitely not.
That'll be must-see TV. I'd love to see that. Thanks, Pat. We appreciate it. And, hey, maybe he'll still send you a video.
Yeah, we'll see. Thanks, guys.
All right, there he is, the World Golf Hall of Fame member. And so major championship season is in the books on PGA Tour champions. How about a reminder of the winners? You got Cabrera after that incredible start. Miguel getting in the mix. But the last two, the story has been Padraig Harrington. Three majors on the regular tour, three now on PGA Tour champions. May he never change. Final women's major of the year is being played at Royal Porthcawl for the first time as Wales hosts the best female players in the world. Coverage Thursday, 7 a.m. Eastern on USA.
Let's take you back to 2024 AIG Women's Open. That was at the Old Course in St. Andrews. Lottie Wode finished the week tied 10th, won low amateur status. That had to be a pretty cool moment there. It's home of golf alongside the winner, Lydia Ko. But she enters this week with two worldwide victories, the most recent coming on Sunday at the ISPS Handa Women's Scottish Open. That was her first professional start. A heck of a start it was too. She spoke today in Wales.
I mean, I feel good, obviously. I don't feel too different, to be honest. But yeah, I got a lot of confidence from the last month, really. So just trying to continue to ride that.
And how much confidence, your performance at the Evian in particular, where you came so close to the playoff, how much confidence does that give you going into a major championship like this?
Yeah, I think a lot. Some of the majors that made the cut didn't really have the best weekend on, so I was really looking to kind of capitalize a bit more on that one, and the final round was obviously really good. So yeah, it definitely gives me confidence in that, and knowing that I can, you know, chase it down on Sunday.
And what are your early impressions of Royal Porthcawl and what it's going to take to succeed this week?
Yeah, I think it'll be a really good test. Obviously, weather is always a factor on links golf, but a lot more demand off the tee than St Andrews last year. So definitely got to keep it in play, and a lot of holes par is a good score, and then you've got to take your chance on the par fives, really.
Okay, well, we'll take some questions from the floor. Thank you. Begin here at the front, yeah.
After your win, obviously, last week, on the long drive down to Wales, did you get a chance to celebrate with any of your family or anyone special?
I mean, I was driving down with my parents, so, we were a 7-hour car journey, there wasn't really much to do, but, I mean, yeah, it was nice to be together.
Has it kind of sunk in yet that you are a LPGA champion?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Yeah, everyone's been really nice, everyone's been coming up to, you know, say well done, so, yeah, it's been great.
And then what have you learned over the past 15 months or so about how to handle increased expectations and attention?
I think it's still a learning process. I don't think you can ever really, you know, fully handle it, but definitely feel like I've got a lot better at it. I just try and block out the noise as much as possible, really.
Lottie, well done on last week. And following on your magnificent July, how under pressure do you find yourself this week? Do you feel any pressure, or it's just another day?
There's always pressure, obviously, but I don't think there's any more than there was from my perspective, you know, before any of the last few weeks. kind of still, you know, was wanted to contend here, and that's still the aim, so, yeah.
And just on a sort of lighter note, how have you spent, or how do you intend to spend any of your prize money?
I need to get a car in America, so I'll probably buy a car. But, yeah.
Jamie, in the front.
Lottie, your favourite, the bookmakers have you as favourite for this week. When you consider it's your first major as a pro, you've got, you know, all the world's best here, does that surprise you?
I don't know. I don't know how they do it, but I mean, I feel like I'm playing well, so I guess I was going to be one of the favourites, but obviously everyone's so good, so I feel like anyone can win, really, and you've seen it this year, so many, you know, I think every win has been different, so, you know, there's so many people that can be.
Yeah, rocket ship ride for Lottie Wood. As we look at the odds for this week, courtesy of DraftKings, you're thinking, well, Nelly's got to be the favorite, maybe Gino, Tittycun, or Minji Lee. No, Lottie Wode is the favorite at 8-1 to win the AIG Women's Open. Defending champ Lydia Ko, 30-1. But what does the world number one Nelly Korda have to say about Lottie?
Absolutely amazing. I was very impressed with her composure, her process. I think, you know, when it comes to pre-shot routine, especially under pressure, in the heat of the moment, sometimes people seem to fidget and kind of doubt themselves, but she stuck to it. She stuck to her process every single time, and I think that's one of the main things that I noticed is, you know, how mature she is for her age and how comfortable she was in, you know, the heat of the moment.
And this will sound a very obvious question, but from what you're saying there, you regard her as a real contender at this major championship level.
Yeah, of course. I mean, as I said, golf is a game of confidence, and she's definitely high up there right now, so she's going to be trusting everything, and her worst finish in the past three events is theoretically second, third. So I think she's also riding a confidence high, too, with how well she's playing.
And Golf Week senior writer Beth Ann Nichols joins us now. Always good to see you. You know, Rory McIlroy said he wanted to win the career Grand Slam as a kid, wanted to be the best player in the world. What of this Lottie Wode? What makes her tick? What is driving her?
Well, simply put, she wants to be the best. You know, it sounds kind of silly, but the fact that she has this incredible love for the game, that what is driving Lottie Wode is all internal. The pressure it's not from, she doesn't care what the media thinks or her peers or her family. No one's pushing Lottie Wode to do what she's doing. Her FSU coach, Amy Bond, says she's never seen a player in her 20 years of coaching who has a deeper love of the game and a higher IQ. Golf IQ, that is. She's a golf nerd. So, you know, and she loves to rise to the occasion. She told me that she likes it when she feels under the gun and the pressure's rising. And that might sound like something you would expect from all top players. But I think back to just last year at the Chevron Championship when So-Yeon Yoo was retiring. And she said, you know, I wasn't really born with a competitive gene. I really, really didn't enjoy being in the heat of competition. And you know, some players are kind of forced into this game in other circumstances. They might not truly love it. They just have a natural talent for it. But Lottie Wode checks all of those boxes in terms of having a good foundation of just loving what she's doing and just wanting to beat everyone.
Doesn't that pose an interesting question, Beth Ann, though, in terms of what kind of a star she's going to be in the future of this game? Because so often there's this requirement or expectation that if you're going to be the superstar, and she certainly has a superstar's golf game, that you have to be willing to embrace, you know, everything outside the ropes and what other people think of you and that whole kind of media ecosystem. Do you see her being the type of person who would grow into that kind of acceptance?
I think she has an understanding already just in talking to her coach, Luke Bohm, that this is, you know, part of the territory. We were talking about this very thing earlier in the year at Augusta National. You know, obviously she won last year, and that was the first time that she was really thrust into the spotlight as she is now. And she's learned and gotten better with media over the course of the past year, knows this is part of the deal. She's never going to be a person who really wants the glitz and the glam. I was talking to Katrina Matthew, who was her Curtis Cup captain earlier today. And she said, you know, she reminds me a lot of a young Kari Webb in that regard. You know, she just wants to win, and everything about her game is solid. There's not one part that you look out as extraordinary, but there's no weakness either. So it's interesting. I love the Kari Webb comparison, but you know, I do hope that she wants to do things that are a little bit outside the box, you know, also understanding that, you know, she has to be true to herself, but this is a tour that definitely needs its stars to do more than just win inside the ropes.
We ask so much of these players. The media asks questions. There's pressure, internal, external, do this, do that, got to learn the golf courses. What are the biggest hurdles maybe facing her in the coming months?
Well, you know, there's so much transition. I would start by the fact that she said she needs to buy a car. She actually doesn't have her driver's license yet, so she's got to do that too. She's famous for taking Ubers to the golf course on the weekends at Florida State to be able to practice at 7:30. Well, most of her peers were sleeping in, but you know, her team is going to be crucial here. You know, she has a down-to-earth family. That's huge. She's had the same coach since she was a little girl, Luke Bone, who's on the bag this week. You know, she's not going to change a whole lot. Obviously, she'll have a professional caddy, and you know, she has management, but the same management team that she's had, you know, as a college student at Florida State with NIL. So that's helpful. But she just has to be wary of not taking on too much, as she's sure to add more corporate sponsors and more responsibilities, you know, off the golf course will pile up. She'll have to, you know, learn how to say no and when to say no. You know, but I also thought it was interesting. I asked last week, you know, what she plans to do about that final year of school in order to get her degree from Florida State. And her answer was, you know, I'm not really sure, you know, it's not really something that I'm focusing on right now. I've got to ask some questions about it, but I was left with the impression that she's in no hurry to balance tour life with finishing up her schoolwork, which is obviously what we've seen Rose Zhang do. So she's definitely going to be very singularly focused in the coming months.
Hasn't there been tremendous value during her college career, Bethan, to the level of starts that she's getting? Not just the fact that she appears in a lot of majors, but it points to the value of the Augusta National Women's Amateur competing on that kind of stage with that level of scrutiny, because we've seen Jennifer Kupcho go on win a major championship. We've seen Rose Zhang excel after going through that kind of cauldron, and now Lottie Wode as well.
100%. You know, obviously when you win the Augusta National Women's Amateur, it comes with a host of major championship exemptions, and then it rocketed her to the top of the world rankings, and then you get more exemptions with the McCormick medal. And it's hard to believe that the Scottish Open last week was the first regular LPGA event, non-major event, that Lottie Wode has ever teed up in. She's played in seven major championships. This week will be her eighth, which is just mind-blowing. So when Lottie goes back to the drawing table after one of those weeks at FSU, she's thinking, okay, I missed the cut here. What do I need to work on? She's focusing on her weaknesses. She knows how she stacks up against the best players in the world, because she's been playing alongside them for the better part of 15 months now. So, you know, her first LPGA start was a major championship. There's been a learning curve there. And another thing Katrina Matthew said that I thought was good was that, you know, she has her approach. She's very methodical in what she's doing, but she's also willing to take advice and listen, which is what, you know, she did at the Curtis Cup with Katrina Matthew, because she has this confidence about her, Lottie. But it's not a cockiness or an arrogance. She's actually quite humble, but she's very confident in what she's doing, as she should be at 55 under par in her last three starts on professional tours. But yeah, I mean, the fact that she's had all this time to really gauge her game against the world's best enabled her to play alongside Nellie Korda for three rounds last week and not be rattled at all.
Yeah, and Lottie already the favorite to win the final major championship of 2025. Life comes at you fast. Bethan Nichols, we appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
Back on Golf Today. What a week it was on PGA Tour America's. Philip Barbary Jr. took sole possession of the 54-hole lead at the Commissioner's Ottawa Open after carding the second sub-60 score in PGA Tour America's history on Saturday. Set a new course record at Eagle Creek with that 13-under-59. Wife Chloe caddying for him. Barbary made 11 birdies, eagled the 18th to cap off his historic round. And the week got even more exciting because Brett White emerged victorious after carding the third 59 in PGA Tour America's history, second in the last couple of days, claimed his first career PGA Tour sanctioned win, started the final round 7 behind Barbary Jr., but after a 5-under 31 on the front, White put himself in the driver's seat with an 8-under 28 on the back, which was capped off by a 63-foot eagle on 18 to give himself the clubhouse lead. His comeback is the largest in PGA Tour America's history.
And Harry Hillier finds himself at some quick company that he wasn't expecting. He was the only sub-60 round on the PGA Tour Americas. He shot that last year out there. Now, there are 3 men in this room. And we're pleased to be joined now by the 2 latest members of the sub-60 club, Brett White and Philip Barbary Jr. Philip, I want to start with you. Since you were first in the house with your 59, we'll start with you. What do you take away from a week like that? And I know you didn't leave with a trophy, but that's got to be tremendous for the confidence.
Yeah, no, it was unbelievable round. Anytime you can get that sort of a round going, it's going to provide a lot of confidence. And, you know, I started off kind of slow and just kind of gradually got into it. And then before I know it, I was standing on the last hole and shot 59. So unbelievable experience. Love being up here in Canada. Hopefully that can help me going forward and trying to move up in these ranks, but yeah, Brett had to steal the show from me, so but we're okay with that. He's a friend, and so can't be happier for him.
Yeah, Brett, you did steal the show and the trophy. You shot 59 on Sunday. You made like a 63 footer for eagle, and I understand you had some insight from the previous year. Is that true? Did you have like a little inkling, a little help from 1 year ago?
Yeah, I actually I had a similar putt on Sunday in the final round last year. I knew I missed it a little low, a little left. It kind of double braked. But to be honest, from like 63 feet, I was just worried about speed. I aimed it like a foot right and just was worried about speed. And about 3 or 4 feet left, I couldn't believe how good it looked. So I think on the video, you know, I've like raised my putter. I'm like never early celebrate or do anything like that. So I must have been feeling it. I guess when you shoot 59, you're definitely feeling it.
Brett, this game, like life in general, I suppose, has a lot of ups and downs. You had a pretty tough stretch not that long ago, viral encephalitis. You had to use a wheelchair. You didn't play golf for a year. How long did it take you to get some kind of sense of normalcy, either in your day-to-day life, much less your career after that?
Yeah, I definitely had some normalcy in my day-to-day life, probably after like 6 months. But just to get any confidence and get my game back, it took a little while, like 18 months, I'd say, a year and a half, until I started regularly competing with the good golfers out there. So, yeah, definitely some ups and downs, but I'm thankful to be feeling as healthy and as good as I do now.
Philip, you've been one of the stars of the season. We had you on live from our cameras following you on Saturday morning at Oakmont. You make the cut. Wife Chloe's on the bag, and she was also on the bag for your 59. I'm curious, what's the conversation like, husband and wife? Like, when she's saying, honey, if you eagle 18, you're going to shoot 59. What's that conversation like between you two?
Well, thankfully she didn't do that. I think she wanted to, but thankfully she didn't let me know where I stood, or else it probably wouldn't have happened. But she knows what she's doing. She's been, you know, obviously the U.S. Open, and she's been caddying out here for over a year, so she knows kind of now when to speak and when not to speak. I think whenever we started, it was probably a little different, but she's well trained and she's a veteran now. But it's awesome to be able to get to do this with her and to share these moments. It's been a dream kind of to be able to make the cut at the U.S. Open and to have these successes with her on the bag. It's special.
And at least she's not telling you about all the household chores that you didn't do the day before as well, which is a good start. Brett, you got the win at the weekend. How does your goal and lineup for the season now change? Because that PGA Tour card, or sorry, the Korn Ferry Tour card is looking an awful lot closer now.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I played solid in the Latin swing. I think I was 11th on the points list coming into the Canadian swing. And the win put me to third. So Still, the goal is going to be top 10. I don't think it's locked up or anything yet, but, you know, some good play will lock that up, and then kind of adjusting my goals to really try and go after winning the Fortinet Cup. So, yeah, look, we got 7 events left, and hopefully some good play will continue.
Brett, it's one thing to shoot 59, another to win, another to do it with your wife, Natalie, and 4-month-old daughter, Nelly. Like, how are you balancing everything? I guess the golf must feel easy when you got, like, an infant keeping you up at all hours.
Yeah, my wife, Natalie, is definitely been awesome these last, you know, 4 months, allowing me to travel to Latin America and now traveling here in Canada with me. And then Nelly's been sleeping great. She's a great traveler. It's just been so fun to be able to go to the golf course, do my work. It's kind of focused my, you know, my practice and everything. It's much more detailed, and I've been playing some great golf since she's been born. So it's great to go to the golf course, play my round, and then hop right back into dad duties. And it's a great distraction while I'm on the road playing.
Philip, I want to ask the last question to you. Brett didn't have to go out again after his 59. You did, because you did yours in the third round. And conventional wisdom always says that, you know, it's very tough to go out there after a super low round and do it again. How did it feel to you going out there for the final round? Did it feel different, or did you think you could actually do that again?
It felt a little different. I think mainly because I was in the position to potentially win. Whereas in the third round, I was just trying to move up the leaderboard. So, you know, I think it was a really good learning experience for me, just to figure out what I need to do next time I get in that position. And I think the more I get into that position, it'll help me. And so, so Brett here, it's inspiration and just trying to get where he's at. And he's got a couple more years on me, so he needs to teach me a couple of his ways. And so next time we can hold the trophy as well.
Well, you guys are riding a 2-round streak of sub-60 rounds, so good luck in the first round this week. We'll be watching, guys.
Hey, appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you all.
We're back on Golf Today. Let's get a check on the Korn Ferry Tour. Ogden Golf and Country Club plays host to this week's Utah Championship. Golf Channel airs coverage of this longtime Korn Ferry Tour event. Dates all the way back to 1990. The inaugural winner, John Daly. Well, Johnny Kiefer is one of the names to look out for in the field this week. He won the 2025 Veritex Bank Championship by 3 strokes in April for his first career win on the Korn Ferry Tour. Kiefer has either held number one or number two position on that Korn Ferry Tour points list since that victory.
Yep, kept the pedal down on Sunday, picked up his second win of the season at the NV5 Invitational. Following his victory, Kiefer now the second Korn Ferry Tour member to achieve tour-bound status, that's the hashtag, and secure PGA Tour membership for the 2026 season. PGA Tour rookie next year, very excited with his best finish in 4 previous tour starts, being a T13 as a sponsor's exemption in his tour debut back at the 2024 Procore Championship. And there is the social media announcement. And great to have Johnny with us on this Tuesday. Congratulations, but I'm wondering if this feels like a natural progression, because 2024, you won the Fortinet Cup. This year, playing great on the Korn Ferry Tour. Now you're tour bound. Does it feel early? Does it feel late? Or does it feel right on time?
I think it's right on time. It's been a really fun progression to, you know, see my game continue through the different stages. But I think the timing's perfect.
A lot of guys can struggle to the early days of being a professional golfer, Johnny. The combination of the travel logistics that you're getting a handle on, the loneliness out there, this tendency to kind of have your self-worth determined by the number you write on a scorecard. It's all very new out there. Why is it so seemingly simple for you right now? Because this progression has been pretty meteoric by standards of most players.
I think it all starts off with, you know, I've got a great support system, my family, my fiance, coaches, all that. And, you know, they made the progression and everything so much easier. The transition just was simple. So I kind of been able to get out here on the golf course and just kind of do me and have some fun. So yeah, it's been nice. And then I'd also like to credit the fact that I don't have 4 hours of homework every night. So, you know, leaving college and being able to, you know, kind of focus a little bit more on my craft has been definitely a little bit easier.
Speaking of your fiance, you had this wonderful moment, Quail Hollow, before the championship. You got engaged. It's always interesting backstory, you know. How did you do it? The planning, who was involved? Take us through that wonderful moment in your life.
Yeah, no, obviously it was a big week for me and my family, and obviously the fiance. But she didn't know it at the time because, you know, first major and everything, a lot of the, you know, attention was pointed kind of towards me. And that's kind of not really what it was all about for me. I really wanted to, you know, kind of pay homage almost to the fact that she's always been there by my side. And I thought it'd be great for us to both kind of celebrate the week and have a great week. So I thought it was perfect timing. You know, she flew in on Wednesday and, you know, was just getting settled down, and we were going to have like a, you know, a good luck Johnny party. And I had a little cake, and you know, it was a great design, and there was a flash paper on top, and lit that up, and on the bottom and said, "Will you marry me?" And thankfully she said yes. That would have been a rough start to the week if she said no.
It's always good to get the most pressure filled moment out of the way before you actually get
exactly.
Balls in the air on the golf course as well. You're 56th in the official world golf ranking, Johnny, which is an incredibly high number for a guy who's been playing predominantly in the minor leagues. And it shows how well you've been playing out there. Did you feel extra pressure when you started this season on the Korn Ferry Tour, knowing that the number of cards available to graduate to the PGA Tour at the end was going to be lower this year than in previous years?
I would probably say there might have been something in the back of my head that said, yeah, it's a little bit more pressure. But I've been playing pretty freely since I turned professional, you know, and, you know, my fiance and my team has kind of always told me, you know, just go out and try and have as much fun as possible, because, you know, when I am doing that, it's usually good and productive. So, you know, I haven't really placed that much pressure on myself, knowing that there was only 20 cards. But, you know, I think behind the curtain, I might have had that in the back of my head. But for the most part, I've just been playing freely and, you know, trying to do my best every week. And thankfully, it's gotten me to the point where I don't really have to worry about that as much right now.
Well, I read that golf wasn't even your first love, that lacrosse was your first love. I don't know if you were in goal or midi. Do you view yourself as a golfer, or are you more of like an athlete who just happens to play golf?
You know, I would probably categorize myself as a golfer now. I probably could not race up and down the field as I once did. But yeah, I mean, I would still kind of consider myself a pretty good athlete. You know, I like playing some pickleball. I like, you know, doing a lot of active stuff. So yeah, I'd probably say that I'm maybe a slightly better athlete, but definitely can't run that much anymore.
Well, perfect timing with the engagement, perfect timing headed to the PGA Tour next year. Congratulations, and thanks for the time.
Yeah, thank you so much.